I'm Jad Abumrad, sitting in for Leonard Lope. The longest-serving inmate in the United States prison system is William Hirons, also known as the Lipstick Killer. He has been continuously incarcerated for more than 62 years. However, serious doubts remain about whether he's even guilty of the murders he was convicted for. And with me now is Adam Higginbotham, a journalist who's written an article about Hirons in the June issue of GQ magazine. Welcome to the Leonard Lope Show.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. So how old is William Hirons? Is that Hirons?
Yeah.
How old is he now?
He's 70. He'll be 80 this year. He turned 79 last November.
Wow. And how old was he when he was locked up?
17. Wow. In June 1946.
June of 1946.
And he's been continuously imprisoned ever since then.
So the last time he was out of prison, we were in World War II, and the Japanese had not yet surrendered.
Technically, World War II was still going on, yeah.
Oh, wow. And before we get to what put him in prison, can we talk a little bit about what that experience has been like from you've met him, correct?
Yeah, I met him I went to see him four times over a few months at the end of last year and the beginning of this year.
And what's he like?
Well, he's not, you know, one might imagine that one was going to meet this kind of nobly suffering victim who could, you know, unreal a lengthy story of his kind of 60 years in prison and that you'd get this sort of, you know, the Shawshank Redemption without the escape.
I would imagine a lot of resentment.
But he actually kind of understates a lot of his experience. It's quite difficult to kind of excavate the details of his experience from him because he remains preoccupied with the details of his case, of what happened in 46. Mm-hmm. But kind of he didn't really want to discuss the day-to-day existence and his day-to-day experience because he thinks it's boring.
Really? What is the day-to-day existence of someone who's been in prison for 62 years?
Well, it's pretty much the same as it was in 1946. You know, there's a count three times a day. You have three meals. You have a count before each meal. And, you know, he said that the hardest part of the experience is that your entire everything that happens to you every day is determined by someone else. You don't make any decisions for yourself.
Mm-hmm. And how does he pass the time? I mean, you have some really remarkable details in your article.
Well, now he's largely confined to a wheelchair, and he's got a cataract that makes him blind in one eye. So he can only read one column of a newspaper before he has to have a rest. So he said to me that he spends most days watching the Discovery Channel in his cell, and in the evening sometimes watches Turner Classic Movies.
And tell me about the cockroaches.
He said that back in the early 50s, when he was incarcerated in Stateville and before that in Menard. Menard is a very old prison that was built by the convicts themselves in the 19th century. It was infested with cockroaches. And he said that he'd be locked up for so long in a cell with nothing to do that he would capture cockroaches, make hats for them, glue them on the heads of the cockroaches, and then release them to run around the gallery.
Wow. How did he get there? Can we talk about the case now? What was he convicted for?
He was convicted because he confessed to the murder of two women and the abduction, strangulation, and dismemberment of a six-year-old girl.
And why was he called the Lipstick Killer?
Because at the scene of the second murder, police arrived at the scene and discovered that someone had written on the wall a message in the lipstick, a lipstick that actually belonged to the victim, which said, "For heaven's sake, stop me. I cannot control my... For heaven's sake, stop me before I kill more. I cannot control myself."
And he confessed to this?
He confessed to all of the murders, yeah.
And what were the circumstances of that confession?
Well, his lawyer, who's acting for him at the moment, told me that in 1946, described the way the Chicago Police Department went about things in 1946 was that their investigation was conducted in the third degree. You know, they were infamous for torturing confessions out of suspects, of beating people in custody. And the Hirons case was no exception. They held him without an attorney for quite some time, strapped to a bed in Bridewell Hospital in Cook County Jail. And they had cops interrogating him in shifts under a light that they didn't turn off. Subsequently, they had a psychiatrist come in and inject him with sodium pentothal in the hope that this would prompt a confession. Wow. And throughout this time, nobody called a lawyer for him. I mean, his actual confession was given sometime after this. So subsequent court hearings and reconsideration of the case that happened in the early 50s, they said that, you know, it didn't have any effect on his confession because too much time elapsed between what was effectively torture and his confession. But I mean, you know.
Yeah. This is the Leonard Lopate Show. I'm Jad Abumrad, sitting in for Leonard, and we're talking with Adam Higginbotham, a journalist who's written about the lipstick killer, William Hirons, and how he's been in prison for more than 62 years. Well, let me ask you this. The confession that you mentioned, I mean, do we know that how do we know that that actually happened and it's not just his version of things?
How do we know that the
confession was not just his version, but in fact, were there others there that could confirm this?
Well,
the torture.
That he was tortured.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the authorities at the time went on the record as saying that they had injected him with sodium pentothal. Well, he testified to this in court.
Mm. And what evidence was used to convict him and incarcerate him?
His confession.
Simply that.
The state's attorney said in court at the time that the evidence, the physical evidence they had against him was not sufficient to gain a conviction.
Mm.
So they needed the confession.
Now, you're a reporter, and as a reporter, you probably try not to have opinions, but is there a decent, probable, very decent, very likely likelihood that he is not guilty for the crimes he's went to prison for?
It seems entirely possible. I mean, the evidence that they had against him, the physical evidence that they had against him, seems unreliable at best. And by their own admission, in many cases, they had fingerprint evidence and they had eyewitness evidence. But in many cases, the chain of evidence was broken and they kind of found fingerprints on documents that had already been handled by dozens of people before they eventually found Hirons' fingerprints on them.
Hmm. And has he filed appeals?
Oh, yeah. Dozens of appeals. He's completely exhausted, according to the courts, every possibility for appeal against the sentence. And therefore, you know, parole is the only possibility left. But he was refused parole for the 30th consecutive time last year. He's up for parole again next month. But since I saw him, he's now become significantly sicker. So his lawyers are trying to get him out on the basis that essentially he's going to die very soon.
Hmm. And when you ask him about it, about the details of his case and the prospect of him dying in prison, what does he say about it?
He says that he still hopes to get out soon. I mean, he doesn't accept that he's likely to die in prison. He just wants to get out for one day so that he can die outside.
Is there anything in his background that would suggest that he could be capable of these murders?
Oh yeah, certainly. There's. I mean, he was a petty criminal as a kid. He was responsible for literally dozens, almost countless burglaries, but not any violent crime. So, I mean, unless you accept that someone who's prepared to kind of clamber up walls and stairwells, fire escapes and break into other people's houses is merely, you know, one step away from brutally stabbing a woman to death, then, I mean, I don't know. There was criminality in his background, and I think that you can clearly argue that that kind of thing can lead to violent crime. But he hadn't committed any other violent crimes.
And has he read your article?
I've no idea. I sent him a copy. I haven't heard from him.
Hmm. Will you be keeping in touch with him?
Well, I'm keeping in touch with, you know, the case, and he's up for parole. So I would certainly like to go and attend the hearing.
I'm just curious how one survives in prison for that long, for 62 years. Tell me about his life in prison. Is it the same thing every day, or did he get an education? I mean, where is he now versus where he started in 1945?
He was in 1945. He was enrolled in a scheme for gifted children at the University of Chicago. And for the first 4 years he was in prison, he, you know, kind of adopted the routines of the lifer. So he played cards, he played handball, he read a lot of science fiction and Western novels. You know, he didn't do anything constructive with his time. But eventually he kind of, after the initial few years, he realized that at the time, because rehabilitation was something that was being emphasized in the penal system over retribution, it didn't seem unreasonable that he could win parole. Because at that time, you know, very shortly afterwards, Nathan Leopold, who was responsible for the murders that were kind of became the subject of the Hitchcock movie Rope, even he was released on parole subsequently and died a free man. So Hirons picked up his education where he'd left off and then spent the next 20 years taking every course imaginable, from anthropology to psychology, and learned to draw, and subsequently became the first prisoner in the Illinois prison system to gain a degree, college degree.
Well, I'm afraid we have to wrap there, but I want to thank you for joining us. Adam Higginbotham wrote an article in the past June issue of GQ about William Hirons, who's been in prison for 62 years. Thank you so much for being on the Leonard Lopate Show.
Thank you for having me.
On tomorrow's show, Leonard will be back. He will talk with legendary Yankee Bobby Mercer. Also, a look at Japanese prints from the 1800s, now on display at the Brooklyn Museum. States of the Union is all about Puerto Rico, and our latest Please Explain. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Sheik, Sarah English, and Scott Goldberg. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We had help today from Judith Weber, Lauren Bonner, and Barbara Kahn. Debbie Daugherty was at the audio controls. I'm Jad Abumrad of WNYC's Radio Lab, and I've been sitting in today for Leonard Lopate. Thank you all for listening.